Hello. We're going to go ahead and get started. Welcome to the Free from Control, How to Let Go and Let God panel discussion. My name is Lisa, and I am a compulsive overeater. Hi, everyone. Step 3 of our program instructs us to turn our will and our life over to the care of God as I understand God. But exactly how do you do that? What does that look like? In today's session, we will hear from each of our speakers for 20 minutes on the topic of how to let go and let God, and then they'll take questions for the final 20 minutes of our time. Without further delay, I would like to introduce Peter, who will share with us for 20 minutes.
Good morning, everybody. I'm Peter, compulsive overeater. And it's good to be here, and thank you to whoever asked me to be on this panel. Okay, so a little bit about myself. Go through the numbers really quick and then give you some context for this topic. I'm 50. I turned 50 back in October. I came to my first meeting on July 4th weekend, 1983. And with a short break, I've pretty much come to meetings on a weekly basis since then. I have 9 years plus of abstinence. I'd had 14 years of abstinence. And then, the program stopped working. And I kind of drifted off, and yeah, I could have sugar, you know. I was having the sugar substitute stuff, so, well, you know, the real thing's, you know, natural and probably better. And 70 pounds later, I figured out that maybe that was not really the best path. And I went on crazy diets. The last thing I wanted to do was come back to OA. The very last thing I wanted to do. I came in at 18. Last time I weighed myself, which was a few days ago, I'm 183. When I came into program, I had just lost a ton of weight. I was a chubby kid. Husky was the word in the 70s and late 60s. I wore Husky brand jeans. I hated it. I was always put on a diet. When I was a year old, I weighed 30 pounds. There are these pictures of me. I was a big kid. So was I born a compulsive overeater? I don't know. And when I, you know, so my whole life diet was and weight was always an issue. I remember losing weight, and when I first went to my meeting in July 4th, 1983, I weighed 145, 150 pounds. So a good 30 pounds lighter than I am today. And, yeah, I was younger. But, you know, it was the idea of, well, if I lose this amount of weight, then things are going to get better. Then if I, you know, lose this amount of weight, my grades are going to get better. My dating life is going to get better. I'm going to feel better about myself. All these things are going to happen. I get to that point. Nothing would change. And I go, well, that's not the number. Go down further and go down further. And it was at the time I was dating another compulsive overeater, which, surprise. And at the time, both my parents had gone into OA. And separately, my parents had been divorced at that point, maybe 15 years. And I remember my father saying to me, "You're a compulsive overeater. You need to go to OA." And he goes, "Everyone in our family's got a problem." And I was like, oh boy, here we go. Lecture. Just what, you know, every 18-year-old wants to hear. And I'm like, yeah. But my eating was out of control. And I knew I was going to gain all that weight back. And then some. And so I went to a meeting. My girlfriend needed it. I didn't need it. So I was going for her and checking it out. But then I went back on my own. And I remember this meeting so well. It was in Washington, D.C. at the time. And they started talking about their feelings. And they talked about things that, you know, as an 18-year-old, there's no way I could put words or a voice to what I was feeling inside. But they gave voice to everything that had been going through my mind and what I've been feeling. And that's when I knew this was the place. I can't say that I didn't get abstinent right away. I didn't understand the concept that well. But I knew my eating was out of control. And I was going to school in Charlottesville, Virginia. There was like two meetings a week, four people. It was not a place to get abstinent. I also had a problem with drinking, and I had an OA sponsor who was an AA, and she goes, I can only show you how to get abstinent the way I get abstinent. And that means my food plan is no alcohol. I'm like, look, you took away the sugar. You're not taking away the booze. So I just didn't tell her about that part of my food plan. And I said, this is OA, singleness of purpose. Somehow I didn't stay abstinent. I could not stay abstinent until I got honest with that side of the ledger. And I finally got abstinent when I graduated from college. I had no idea what I was going to do, so I decided to move to Paris, France. I do not speak French. I have very, 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 very distant cousins who I'd met once, and, well, I'll go see them. And they didn't even live in Paris. And I found myself in Paris, and I was 2 months, not even that, sober, crazed. I found myself at the American church, and at an AA meeting, at the end of the meeting, I raised my hand. I said, well, I'm Peter, an alcoholic from Charlottesville, Virginia. I need to talk to someone after the meeting because I'm going to drink. So this guy comes up to me and he goes, let's go out for coffee. And he goes, I'm from Charlottesville, Virginia, and there's another guy here from Charlottesville, Virginia. We're here writing a book. I thought, oh, well. And then this woman came up to me and she goes, are you in OA? I go, yeah. How did you know? She goes, I don't know, but we have an OA meeting in English starting downstairs in about 10 minutes. Why don't you come on downstairs? I was like, wow, okay, well, I guess I'm supposed to be here. And, you know, that really was my first step. And, you know, looking at the letting go and letting God, it is, you know, I think really to attain any amount of spirituality, I have to go through a lot of pain. I have to go through a lot of problems. Fear of economic insecurity is a big one for me. So I need to have a lot of economic insecurity. Why? Because then I get to test out the theory of turning it over. Does it work? Not does my financial situation improve. That's what I thought it meant by working. But am I going to be at peace? Can I let go and turn this over to God or higher power or whatever it is that you choose to call this version of a higher power? And so that was, I wanted the spirituality without the work, and it just would not happen. And, you know, without that 6 years, when I came back to OA again, there's always someone in a meeting. And I remember coming back to the kitchen sink in Los Angeles here, and I hadn't been to meetings in 6 years. I had lost the weight. My doctor basically said, you're going to have a heart attack, you're going to die, you need to lose 70 pounds, you're going to start running marathons. All my patients run marathons. You're going to run the 2003 Los Angeles Marathon. And I was like, oh, my God. So I did that, and then lost all this weight and promptly hurt my leg and was going to have surgery, and the weight started to creep back on. And I said, I can't do this again. So I went back to OA, and I saw a lot of people I recognized, and they're like, where you been? And I was like, oh, it felt so comfortable because I've spent most of my life here. And there was a guy, I was like, he looks so familiar. And it was a guy I sponsored in Philadelphia years ago who had moved to LA, and I had no idea. And I said, okay, there it is again, that person who just shows up in the meeting. I guess I'm supposed to be here. And that was the beginning of my abstinence 9-plus years ago. And one of the things that I've had to learn is that the program, the big book, is not written logically. It's written from a spiritual point of view. And so there's a language of spirituality. And I had to write down some of this stuff because, you know, I still haven't had all my coffee I need for the day. You know, and it talks about our problem has been removed. It ceases to exist. You know, when I got abstinent, that became true. I have little kids today. They have candy and junk all over the house. I don't have it. I don't notice it. They're like, is there any ice cream left? I go, I don't know. Go look. Believe me, I knew where everything in that house was, eaten, half eaten, whatever. Today, I don't know. The problem ceases to exist. You know, if you said to someone, okay, your problem ceases to exist, it's gone. That does not happen. Okay, your car broken down, that ceases to exist to be a problem. It's been taken care of. That's a very odd way to approach things, and yet that's what exactly happened with my compulsive overeating, and it can happen for all of my other issues. The problem doesn't go away. It ceases to be a problem because I've shifted my attitude from, I got to solve it, to there's a solution, and I need to turn it over and find out what the next thing to do is. And one of the things that, you know, and when I don't know what to do, I don't know what to do with a lot of things. Work, my relationships, I'm like, I don't know, should I be here, should I not be here, what should I be doing? And they go, my sponsor will say, more will be revealed. And what he doesn't say and what they don't say is, more will be explained. I want an explanation. I don't want revelation. Because revelation is, the answer is there. I may not understand it or fully conceive of what it is, that is the answer. I'm like, okay, what does this mean? I don't understand the significance of it. But over time, I'm going to begin to understand what it is I'm supposed to be doing. I want an explanation. And I kept looking for that and praying for the explanation, and I wasn't getting it. Things were being revealed, but the solution was being given to me. I just didn't understand the full implications or what it was I was supposed to do. And again, it's that concept of the spirituality. It works different than the linear mind. And it had been very, very difficult for me to think about. And, you know, a lot of times it's, you know, what is God's will? Should I stay in this job? Should I not stay in this job? Should I stay in this relationship? Not stay in this relationship? Should I do this? Should I not do this? You know, and a really good barometer for me has been, you know, when you really want something, you really want things to go in a certain way, you really, really, really want it, then that's not my will. That's my will. That's not God's will. You know, if I just let go, and I have to do that and see that things are going to work out, not the way I want it to work out. I remember calling my sponsor back in August of 2009. I work in the financial industry. And I called him up, and this was after all the crisis, economic crisis. I said, I'm broke. I have no money. Nothing. It's done. It's over. I don't know how I'm going to pay the mortgage this month. I don't know how I'm going to take care of all this stuff. Blah, 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 blah. You know, he gets, you know, listening to me spin out. He goes, well, we don't know about that. He goes, you're not broke. And I go, I'm broke. You want to see my bank account? There's nothing in it. I'm broke. And he goes, do you have a retirement account? I go, yeah, but I can't touch that. He goes, okay. Relax. You'll be taken care of. And I go, easy for you to say. You got a job. You know, I don't have any money coming in. And he goes, pray about it. So every day I prayed about it. And I pray for that economic insecurity to be relieved. And I'd have it removed. And I'd pray, and it wouldn't be removed. And I'd pray, and it wouldn't be removed. And I go back to him, and I go, I'm praying for this economic insecurity to be removed, and it is not being removed. This is not working. And he goes, you still in your house? I go, yes, I'm still in my house. Why? And he goes, well, I thought you were broke. I go, I am broke. He goes, well, what's happened? I go, what do you mean what's happened? He goes, you're okay, aren't you? And I go, that's not the point. You know, he said, why don't you stop praying for the economic insecurity to be relieved? I go, well, then how's it going to be removed? Because maybe it already has, but you're creating this self-obsession. You're really raising this up, and you're making this economic insecurity an obsession. Stop praying for that. Stop praying for yourself here. Let go and realize you're going to be taken care of. And realizing that you're going to be taken care of, maybe that you lose your house, that you lose your job, that you declare bankruptcy, that you've got to move because you can't afford to live in L.A. That may be God's will, and you need to be okay with that and be comfortable with that. I had a very difficult time with that, as you can imagine. But finally I said, okay, you know, I'm powerless. I'm just going to have to believe that if it's that stuff is supposed to happen, I'm going to be taken care of. Didn't quite get that dire. Things, you know, bumpy, to say the least. But what I saw through that experience was I made it through. I was okay. I was abstinent. It didn't kill me. And a few other things would happen, and it, you know, my life didn't end. And I have this idea, like, you know, a five-year-old that, oh, my God, if this happens, you know, I'll never survive this. It's like, no. If I just trust I'm being taken care of, I can get through everything fine. That came about because I had to test this theory of turning it over to a higher power and letting go and letting God. And, you know, sometimes what I have to do is become become an interested observer in my life, to step back and just watch. It's like a film. Okay, so what's the next scene going to be today? I have no idea. But just let it unfold like a movie and go, oh, okay, well, that's kind of interesting. Okay, I just lost my biggest client. Okay, what does that mean? All right, well, let's see what happens. And it was fine. I mean, no change to my income, nothing. It was fine. And so a lot of times I use those tricks to help me with turning it over. My sponsor says, my life is none of my own business. And it is true. Thanks. It's, you know, doing the steps, you know, turning it over. You know, I think as soon as I turned it over, you know, I got very, when I left the program in 99 or so for a few years, you know, I'd gotten the job, I had gotten married a few years before, I was abstinent, I had all this stuff, and I was looking for my job to take care of me, my relationship to sort of take care of me, and program to take care of me. And what I discovered is none of that was going to take care of me. And I defined taking care of me as things were going to be, you know, turn out a certain way. And I began to lose faith, and I really drifted for a while. And, you know, what I had to realize was that I have to turn it over. What's going to happen is going to happen. You know, I couldn't have gotten an abstinent 2 years before I did. It had to come in a higher power's time. Things aren't going to unfold the way I want them to, no matter how hard I work the steps or how hard I turn it over. So my job is just to sit back, because what's going to happen is going to happen, I believe, today. Some call that passivity. But the way I choose to look at it, and someone put it beautifully, is that, you know, I move into a new house. The next door neighbors are loud. I move in next door. I got these horrible neighbors. They're loud. They bug me, and I'm going to kill them. God is in charge of the noun. I moved into a new house, and I have neighbors. I'm in charge of the adjectives. I can choose to change those adjectives or remove them. And when I keep it just on the noun and, you know, my higher power, the same situation happens, but I can have a completely different experience. But I have to turn it over. And it all comes back to A, B, and C. You know, I'm a compulsive overeater. I can't manage my own life. No human power, including mine, can relieve me of my compulsive overeating. And God could and would if you were sought. And how do I sought? How do I seek? You know, the 12th step says, having had a spiritual awakening as the result. Singular. Doesn't get me abstinent. Doesn't get me sober. Doesn't make me a nice person. It allows me to have a spiritual awakening. That's it. So if I do the 12 steps, I can have that spiritual awakening and then begin to seek some sort of solution with a higher power. And after a while, you know, I remember saying, gee, things aren't going right. I think I need to rededicate myself to the steps and really go through them again and work through them. And that was controlling my program. Things are the way they are. My job is to let go and let a higher power direct me. All right, what am I going to do today? I don't know. Okay, let me turn it over and see what's going to happen. And it's a shift in attitude. And one of the things that, you know, my energy goes from fighting what's going on, fighting for things to turn out a certain way is to put it in other very, very productive ways. And, you know, it is all up to me what I want things to look like. And that doesn't mean bad things don't happen. Bad things happen. But I'm going to be fine. You know, someone very close to me, Yadis Von C, last year passed away. He had cancer. He was my age. I hope never to go through that. But it wasn't me. I was okay. And it was also amazing to see him use the 12 steps and go through it with such grace and dignity. It really was an amazing experience and a lot of things that I had never thought about. But if I thought about how unfair is it that he has to go through this and die, I could have been very embittered. And yet I would have missed all that other stuff that was going on with him during that time and being a part of that. And so it really is a decision that I'm going to turn it over. And then from that, a series of actions through the steps to do that. And then on a daily basis saying, okay, let's just see what happens. And that's really what my prayer is. You know, I pray to be of service to other people. And let's see what happens. Let me be open to it, whatever it is, good or bad. And at the end of the day, I go, okay, I made it through another day. I'm absent. I'm okay. And everything's going to work out. Thank you.
Sure. Thank you, Peter. Speaker two. Oh, never mind. I don't read that part. next up is. So we're going to go with Emmy. Okay, here you are.
Good morning. I'm Emmy, a compulsive overeater. Hey, Emmy. And I know it. I came into Overeaters Anonymous in 1975, planning. That means I'm really old. Not really. Yes, really abstinent. Pardon?
You were two.
I was. Oh, you're so kind. I love it. Anyway, my age doesn't bother me. Really, I joke about it. I joke about my husband's, because I've had several. The bottom, and I got them, two of them I got in the program. I married three men identically. They were all alike, but they had different bodies. You know, I learned, as Peter said, you know, we, until the pain gets so bad. And this is anyway, I've been abstaining since I came in. I will be taking a candle in March for 40 years, which is a miracle, believe me. I just showed up every day. I just showed up. And those people who know me, they know I just show up. I don't have any magic at all. My top weight was 220 pounds. My biggest dress size was size 22 with a bow down the back to cover my ass, which didn't quite make it. And today I have a bow on my dress and you can't even see the bow because it's just a little bow. I don't have to hide who I am today. I also, when I came in, I just got my driver's license. I was 28 years old. I had three children and a dog and a husband, husband number one, who I still have a relationship with. And I have a relationship with number two. Number three, not so good. I don't talk to him. I don't even know where he is, and that's fine. About letting go, it was a trial and error. I could fill this room, I could fill this hotel with all of the signs that I followed, and blessings were heaped upon me. And when I came in, I had a religious God. There were rules, there was regiment, there were certain prayers, there were certain things that I had to do in order to be worthy of a power greater than myself to care for me. And when I was 8 years old, I touched myself. It's called masturbation. And my mother caught me, and she said that I would go to hell. I'd be a crispy critter. So by eight, I knew I was toast. I was never going to make it in the eyes of God. So when I came into Overeaters Anonymous, and it says a power greater, you know, God as I understand him, I didn't know what understanding meant because I only had one choice, this choice. I never liked that choice, even as early as I can remember in church school, parochial school. I never bought their rhetoric. It just didn't fit me. There was something innate in me that said, this isn't right. And I was devout. I did everything that I was supposed to do. And it still didn't bring me the peace that I saw other people having. I wanted that peace that people said they have. Well, today I know the peace has to do with my actions towards things. It gets easier the longer that I do it. I could fill this room with all the mistakes because I didn't follow the direction that came to me. Now, when sometimes I see a direction from this source greater than myself, and it's standing there waving flag, stop sign, has on a little jacket that neon lights, telling me, don't go down this way. And I go, I got it. In the big book, it talks about self-will run riot. That is my middle name. Emmy, self-will run riot, Sims. And I've had to learn over the years that it doesn't work. It just doesn't work. And because those of any of you that have been here long enough, I mean, 1 to 2, 3 years, you see people come back in the door. I admire them that can do that because I would have never done it. I mean, I attempted suicide as a child, as a young adult child, and I was on my way, the fourth attempt, as soon as I got everything in order. I had nothing to live for, my children, the dog, or the husband. I was miserable. I was so fat. I was so miserable. I didn't drive. My husband made all the decisions for me. I didn't think on my own. I was not capable of thinking on my own because I felt so stupid, fat, ugly, all of those things. And everybody knows what I'm talking about. And I will give you the two recent examples of letting things go. And the only way that I can tell you how to do it is try it. Because the big book and the 12 and 12 talk that we love the drama. We love the chaos. And it says in there that we like it so much we're not willing to let it go. And I have someone that I sponsor. She says, that just isn't true. I says, okay. I don't fight with anybody anymore. And I'm a great debater. I mean, I love to debate. I just don't do it anymore because it like Peter said, it just there's something in him, there's something in me that says this is an adjective. And I love that term, Peter. I think I may adopt that. I like that. Because I know what an adjective is today. It shows action. And I would get in there and I would just turn things around. But I have just had two shoulder replacements. I have two brand new shoulders. And I'm very happy with them. They don't squeak or anything. But they, you know, I am titanium. And the fellow that I've been involved with for 11 years, his first question was, well, are you going to squeak when we have sex? I says, no, Anthony, we're not. But I asked the doctor, and he laughed. So I had to sell my bicycle because he told me, he says, you cannot fall down. You can't do that. And I really wanted to ride my bicycle. And the bicycle, from the pedals up was too high, so to get my leg over. Anyway, so I sold my bicycle. And I really wanted a tricycle because I've seen them, and I thought that's something that would not fall down and go boom, you know. Mm-hmm. And I could get a real cheap one, and I was raised to buy cheap, you know. But so I researched it, which I normally never did, you know, so that I could make an intelligent decision all by myself. Emmy Sims could make a decision all by herself. And, of course, the one that I wanted was very expensive. And I had $150 put away for my new bike, but I didn't realize what they were going to cost. And so I said, well, you're just going to have to handle it because I cannot spend that kind of money and justify it, you know, unless it's a purse or shoes or something, you know, or a new ring. So I've been on disability since May, and I get off disability the 1st of May. And my company that I worked for at that time just terminated me because my family leave is, it's all gone. But I did not know I had vacation money coming. I had no idea. Not only did enough to pay the bike, I had enough to put in the savings. And I just said, thank you. Because as soon as I got that check, I knew that I could get the bike because I was not going to charge it. And if I couldn't pay for it, I wasn't going to do it. And that would be a sign. And I just smiled. And a couple years ago, I sold my big house. I had a 4-bedroom house, and I was tired of making the payments and the water and the electric, and I had a huge backyard, and you know what that costs today. And so I sold it, and I bought a mobile home, which I dearly love. But I bought the mobile in November, and I didn't put my house on the market till January. And they said, you're crazy. I says, I just know. I just knew. I don't know how to tell you I knew. But my experience is, I'm a cook. You know, I can taste something and figure out what's in it. And if you make a cake the same way every time, your chances are it's going to turn out right. You know what I mean? Whatever it is. And I knew. I don't know how to tell you. And I was going to get an apartment when I started adding up the cost of a, and I did my research. I never did anything with research. I always impulse. This is what I want. I'm going to go for it. Period. Didn't matter what the cost was going to be. I wanted it, and that's all there was to it. Today I don't do that. And everything fell into place. My house sold in 8 hours. Full pop, $120,000 down. She had cash. Who ever thought? I just knew. There was a knowing. I know that if I abstain, that's my price that I pay. I must abstain. I believe that abstinence is the most important thing in my life, without exception. Without exception, without exception. Man, child, parents, job. Doesn't matter. Because I will not have what I have today. I will live in the adjective, not in the noun. I don't like my oven. I had to cut the handles off my pan to get it in my oven because I live in a mobile home. And it's an older mobile home. You know, the new ones today that you buy, their kitchens are totally different. So I have this great handyman because Anthony, though I love and adore, don't give him anything near electric. Changed a light bulb and blew out my ceiling fan. Need I say more? Adoring. Not a handyman. So I have this handyman named Richard. And I'm stewing. I've already been to the store. I'm looking at new stoves. I'm doing the schematics. I'm looking here. I'm writing it down. Say, I got this much money. I can do this. And I am off. I am off and running. So I call Richard on the phone, and I'm with my girlfriend, Colleen. I says, what do you think about this? Blah, blah, blah. She says, oh, my God, we can go get it right now. I says, oh, we can go get it right now. I says, oh, my God, that means that I can for my – I'm having a big dinner in February for all the my babies, the people that I sponsor. And I haven't been able to do it because of surgeries and moving and everything. So I'm really looking forward to cooking for my girls that I sponsor. And I'm planning, boy, I'm telling you, I can get this in there and this in there, and I've got it all. I can smell the turkey, you know? And then something inside said, I called Richard. He says, well, yeah, if you want to buy it, go ahead and buy it. And then, you know, if it doesn't work out, you can return it. And I thought, well, of course. You know how easy, how hard is it to return an oven? This thought came over me. And I told Colleen, I says, you know, I'm going to wait. That's all I said. We'll see. Richard's coming over on Thursday. I'll wait. This was Tuesday. That's 2 days I can't have what I want. And I got home, and it was in the back of my mind, almost to the front, but not quite, kind of like in the middle of my mind. So the next morning, every morning when I get up, I turn on the coffee, I go to the bathroom, and I sit down in my chair with my coffee. And I said out loud, because I live by myself, which I really like. And I says, you know, I don't know how you're going to handle this, but if you want to use Richard to be the mouth of you, whatever Richard says, I will. Because he's got to do all the work. All I have to do is pay for it, right? So Richard came, and of course he was late. He called me and told me, but he was late, so I had to wait longer. And I just said, okay, just, you know, so he gets under there and he measures and he tries. He says, it's not going to work this way. And he says, it's not going to work this way, Emmy. It's not going to work. And there was a peace that came over me, and I said, okay. And I don't know where it came from, but I had exercised long enough, and it became evident to me. If I was not abstaining, I would have had to remodel the entire kitchen just to get a new oven and gone in debt. And I'm self-supporting declining outside contributions. And that would not have been wise. And so that's how it is. There's two things that kills people in my family, alcoholism and cancer. I will probably go of cancer. And I joke about it because it's a fact in my life. You know, it's just like my hair turned gray in high school. My mother had white hair. My dad had white hair. My sister's got white hair. My other sister's got. It's just, you know, genetics. I don't worry about it. My son's an alcoholic. He's 40 years old. He's working at Denny's. Now, any of you that are mothers, you know that I just don't jump up and down and say, yay, you're working at Denny's. Because he's smart. He's bright. He's intelligent. Cuter than a button. I just adore him. However, I don't do drunks anymore. Been there, done that too many times. Financially, emotionally, physically, bankrupt. And so he said to me, if it doesn't work out here, Mom, in Louisiana, can I come home? I says, no, honey, you can't. But you'll do right. You'll do okay. Now, I learned how to do that by Al-Anon. I went to Al-Anon for a long time because my dad was a drunk, my grandfather died as a drunk, and I married three drunks. I tell you. Different package, though. I just really couldn't tell, you know. Believe me, the signs were there. I chose not to look at them. I can't blame anybody. And I learned how to let go, and I learned how to detach. And I recommend, because it's part of my story, and I checked this with one of the board members. I checked to see if I could say that. Al-Anon, One Day at a Time, is so important to my life. I'm on my second book because the other one is worn out. That's how I learned to let go. Whatever problem I have in my life, I just stick it in there. You know, I'm powerless over food. I'm powerless over my son. I'm powerless over the kitchen. I'm powerless over the bicycle. I'm powerless over, I don't have a job. I don't get a new job, and I can't even apply for one until May. I'm not going to worry about a job. How can you not worry? Well, first off, I have Social Security, and that's why I plan financially to live within my means. You know, I may not be able to go out to lunch with Cynthia when I go to Vegas or ask Peter for coffee to see if he'll speak at a meeting. I have to pay attention, and I've never really had to pay attention because I had somebody to, you know, and it's just, my life is so sweet. I am 68 years old. I expected to be a grandma of many. I expected to be married to the same man. I wanted a rocking chair. I wanted to bake cookies in an apron. I never, ever, ever in my life wanted to be divorced, especially three times. Whatever you think of me is none of my business, but that's not what I wanted at all. I tried to make it work. It just didn't work. I wanted my kids to all be bright. I have a relationship with both my boys. I do not have a relationship with my two girls. That's their choice, not mine. And it's not because of anything that I've done. That makes me sad. That's not the way it's supposed to be, but it's the way it is for me. And I have the best damn life ever. I have, not that I want anybody to be envious of me, and that's not why I'm saying this, but the women in my book club, in our book club, just look at me and say, you've got the perfect life. I says, I know I have no children or a husband, but I love it. I go out with Anthony. We have great sex, great dinners. We have parties. We have a ball, and we have our fun, and just then he goes home. I love it. But I've earned that, believe me. I have learned it. And, you know, life is grand, and life is to be enjoyed. It is to be enjoyed. And if you can't enjoy it, if I'm not having a good time, most of the time I need to look at why. Because it is my responsibility. If I'm miserable, I need to look at why. If I'm not abstaining, get abstaining. If I don't have a sponsor, get a sponsor. Because the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, this one right here that she has leather bound, you want to hold that up? So, please, we're advertising. Tells me exactly how to do it. No ifs, no ands, no buts. It tells me if I do A, B, and C. In the original manuscript of Alcoholics Anonymous, it said never have we seen a person fail. I have a copy of the original manuscript. Never, but they made him change it. Rarely do we see a person fail. And it's been my experience that no one has ever failed that's thoroughly followed its path. And because I do those things that I'm told to do, and my sponsor's got 44 years, and she still does exactly what I do because she taught me. I get up every morning and I start my day with this power greater than myself. Monday through Monday, holidays. This morning I read with my friend just one little prayer, and she read one little prayer. But we started our morning. It's just what I do. I have a book at Anthony's house. I go in the bathroom. I open up the drawer. I take it out. And I say, yay, God. And I don't even know what a God is. It doesn't have an image. If it was going to have an image, it'd be George Burns. Because he said, the question, and this was the question, was Jesus the Son of God? He goes, yeah, just like the guy who charges $3, $13.44 is the Son of God. We are all the sons. We're all the daughters. We are his children, whatever it is. And it's our right to have a good life. We're the only ones that keeps it away from ourselves. Thank you so much for being here, and thank you for asking me.
Thank you so much, Emmy. And our final speaker is Cynthia.
Hey, y'all. I'm Cynthia, and I'm a compulsive eater, anorexic, and bulimic. Hey, and welcome. Thank you very much for coming. Have y'all had a good time? Yeah. Woo-hoo-hoo! We've all stayed sane and abstinent during this great weekend in L.A. I always was afraid of L.A. I'm from Atlanta. And I used to travel with my job, and there was lots of job opportunities in California, but I was scared. My mother even said, don't go to California. Those people are mean there. And but through program and having an open mind, I'm learning that it's not, you know. And from there in Georgia, there's a lot of miles in between. And you never know, you know, it's amazing how throughout the more I stay in program, the more I thought I knew, and I really don't know. I'm always amused with my ignorance when it's pushed up against the wall or whatever, and I'm like, oh, my God, it really wasn't that bad. Or like going to a restaurant, and you're like, oh, my God, they actually have something else on the menu than what I thought, you know. But anyway, what I've done here, just to let y'all know, is any of y'all familiar with the God box? Okay, well, I brought a God bag. All right, I'm not endorsing Trader Joe's, but my whole point was sometimes I make a mountain out of a molehill, and I have to like make this elaborate bag, or I have to make this elaborate box. No, it can be just a simple bag. And so what I've done is, if y'all are interested before, during, or after our panel, is if I have notepads and pens, and if you can, you're not rude, you can just come up or after or whatever, and if you're something that you want to let go of and you want to put it in the God bag, then at the end, if you're comfortable with this, what I'll do is shake it up, and then somebody else can pick up pick it up and then they can pray for you. So it's just an idea. All right. So, and also what I've done is, you know, sometimes it's, for me, it's important to have like reminders of, throughout the day of, God's in charge. And so, what I've done is some people have little, you know, bracelets, coins, use their OA coin, whatever. What I've done is I picked up rock. Well, actually, these were gems instead of rocks at Walmart. And I was like, oh, I like the name gem because I'm, you know, we're gems. So anyway, if you want to pick one up, take one so that you can have a reminder at home or whatever. And it's inconspicuous. So because sometimes with there's letters on, you know, if there's words on rocks, people look at it like, what is that? You know, so anyway, so, you're welcome to help yourself. As far as my my story is, I came in Atlanta, Georgia, June 1st of 86. I was 19 years old. Before that, I'd been introduced to OA in 85. I graduated in 85 from high school, so it was 84. At the end of, well, I was 17, bless you, 84, and I had the pleasure of staying in treatment for all the major holidays, 84 to 85, and learned about OA. But what had happened was, is up to that point, I'd been anorexic and bulimic. And when I came out of that program, I thought I had the answer because I had treatment. And what happened was I didn't follow it up by going to meetings or doing anything. And so when I relapsed into the food, I went down bad with, and you know, they say that when you, that you might have a period of, abstaining from your addiction. And it's once you pick it back up, it's like you never stopped. And that's what it was like. And on top of that, I started drinking. So you can imagine. So what I did is, I was being brilliant. I thought, well, I'll quit using laxatives. And I thought, well, because then that'll control my weight because I'll die before I get fat. Well, that didn't happen. I started gaining weight. And, that's when in 86 of June 1st, 86 is when I came into treatment, and I committed to OA, and thought, and I realized that I was powerless over food because I could not quit it on my own. The mental obsession and the physical craving was just too much. And I knew that treatment just at that time was just to help me get through the medical part of getting through the physical cravings. The mental obsession had took me a lot longer to do. And I didn't talk about letting go and letting God. I did not like OA when I got here. But I knew that food was my master, and I knew I needed to stay here regardless of how I felt about it. And through a period of time, what I learned was, I'm in another 12-step program, and they say don't drink, go to meetings, and you'll be contacted, but I use that also with my OA program. You know, don't eat, go to meetings, and you'll be contacted. And what that meant for me was just do the next right thing, and when I would have an aha moment, to check it out with somebody, you know, and like, and it was amazing how those, God's just my higher power. If I look back, how my higher power has, given me these little ideas. Never when I tried to control it or try to figure it out or pull myself up by my bootstraps and this is how I'm going to do it. It was like more just like, okay, just do the next, you know, they say the next right thing. Well, the next right thing, I didn't know what the next right thing is. Well, do you have dishes in the dishwasher you need to do? Do you need to make up your bed? Do you need to whatever? Just doing the next thing in front of me rather than my mind going. Anyway, so as a result of that, I was in 86 and I in Atlanta. And through a period of my program, what has happened is I would get an aha moment and then I would check it out and I would be terrified to do it. But through the program, y'all have really helped me. I was a performer at one time and I was really scared about auditioning for this Six Flags over Georgia. Anyway, my big claim to fame here. Anyway, so what I did is I went to an OA meeting that Saturday morning before I went to auditions, and I was terrified. But the letting go and letting God is like you just regardless of how terrified you are, show up. And however it turns out is God's will for you. As long as I don't drink, don't use, kill anybody, and stay plugged in to the program, I am a winner. Or I can just do it. I don't even have to look good doing it because I don't generally. But I'm one of those through the program that y'all have helped me to become the woman I am today. But but grow up in public, you know, and thank God for Step 10 where I get to learn about that. One thing that has really helped me, I brought out a couple of things, is acceptance is the key to my relationship with God today. I never just sit and do nothing while waiting for him to tell me what to do. Rather, I do whatever is in front of me to be done, and I leave the results up to him. However it turns out is God's will for me. And that's another thing about saying. That's on page in the third tradition, 420. Because I was like the kind of person that, like, I'd be at a red light and I didn't know if I should turn left or right. Should I go to the meeting? Should I not go to a meeting? Should I do-da-da-da-da-da-da? It's like, just do something, you know? And with the letting go and letting God, what has happened is I had a great idea in my program that I'd always wanted to live in a Latin American country. I became it took us 2 years to prepare for this, me and my ex-husband. I was in Atlanta, and we decided to go down there and live, and I was going to help people in my profession. Anyway, but someone made this, said, if it doesn't work out, Cynthia, you can come back. No, that's what I was thinking. But what happened was that I went down there. This was in Costa Rica, and there was OA, and I went to it, and I talk about a God shot. My OA sponsor from Atlanta, she's like really big into cruises. So her and her husband were on this cruise, and they ended up at the port of Punta Arenas, which is like 4 hours away from where I lived in San Jose. And we went there to see her. Who would have thought that she would have showed up? She was there during the time. I was only there for less than a year and a half. But I, at that time, was not very happy about living in Costa Rica. Costa Rica's great. I'm just not a third world gal. I was like, my husband at the time was like so happy and everything's going great for him. And I'm just like, I'm hating him. I'm hating everybody. And I'm through program. I know that the problem is me and I cannot live with my bitterness. So what happened was when she was down there during that port stop, she goes, you're going to need to do some writing about it. And what I realized is that I had a lot of different expectations of myself than reality. Like, really, I, in the U.S., in Atlanta, I'm okay with being living in, you know, third world country. But when I'm in reality and living in a third world country, it's completely different. And I realized that I had to admit my limitations. And that's another thing about, like, I just knew that other people were going to laugh at me or just my own ego. But once I admitted that I had limitations, I was free. And then it got to be a big joke, you know, and then I didn't hate him anymore. And then I could admit, just like in the program, that we admit defeat and we feel much better, you know, or want to become more open-minded, is that I was free. You know, and then through a period of events, I came back to the U.S. and Kevin stayed there. The other thing is I went through a divorce in the program. And the only reason why I say this is because of my – it really hurt. I just knew that we would – hell or high water, I was going to always stay married, even if we were not happy. And what happened was I couldn't live here in the U.S. and Kevin couldn't be in the Costa Rica. And my sponsor said, you're going to have to do some writing about this. And she said that what you should do is pray. I prayed, okay, God, bless it or block it. You're going to have to tell me what I need to do about this. And 2 days later, Kevin told me he was having an affair with another woman. And that was, be careful what you pray for. But through that, what happened was, is the people in OA really helped me. Because I found out that Friday night and the Saturday morning, I went to my OA meeting in Atlanta, Georgia, in Decatur. And all those ladies helped, walked me through. That was a true, like, letting go and letting God. And like, I didn't know if what really what to do. And I remember calling my OA sponsor, and I said, well, I can't go back to work on Monday. She goes, well, why not? Well, Kevin's had an affair on me. She goes, well, you still can go to work, you know. You know, but that's how the mind, my disease is it's always looking for an excuse to binge or use something or da-da-da-da-da. And it's like, and I wanted to undereat, and she said, don't do that. I remember calling her. She goes, well, that's really going to show him, you know. Or, and so that whole process of, like, I really feel that my higher power speaks to me through other people. And I got through that. It was very humbling, but at the same time, it opened me up for more, because I thought that if there's a will, there's a way. And it really opened me up more to the program and loving the program more and being more real. You know, it's all because it's for my whole program has I've always wanted to look good at all costs. And what the thing is, I can't save my ass and my face at the same time. So through that, I've had a lot of freedom. And, you know, even now in my program, you know, when I mess up, I have to admit and through letting go and letting God, I find out what I need to do to fix it. Or maybe nothing but just to sit with it and accept that I'm still a child of God and a person of worth, and y'all are too. And you have to accept that y'all too are not necessarily gonna like me or whatever. I'm still learning that. But, one thing too, besides that one that has been really good was a couple of little letting go and letting God things are for me to remember is, like, I know I'm working my program when I go to the grocery store and they're out of something and I don't ask them to go in the back to look to see if it's there. Or maybe they need my help to go back there and find out if it's there. You know, or, you know, just like letting, or at the red light, or at the, in traffic, you know, like, what's the worst thing? Just sit there. You know, Friday afternoon yesterday when I was leaving work home, I left work early to, you know, and there was it wasn't even a car wreck on the road. It was on the side, but we all have to look. So I'm like, breathe, and, you know, that's letting God, you know, it's on God's time frame, not mine, you know. And then one more thing that's really big and that's going on right now for me is I have always been afraid of the world coming to an end. I grew up in the Cold War, during kind of like the Cold War and Ronald Reagan time, and this is when I was getting abstinent, was during Libya, Gaddafi, and there was a lot of fear that we were going to blow up. Anyway, and I just remember binging over that. Like, I could have done something in Tucker, Georgia, but I was seriously, like, have serious panic attacks about it. And I had, as humbling as it was, and some people don't understand about this, I had to talk about it because I knew that was the only way I was going to get through it. And that was a true letting go and letting God, because there's nothing else I could do about it. You know, I'm not a world leader. And, I mean, I could try to do something from my end, but calling people and talking about it, not going to the food, looking up stuff in the book, praying, and just staying in today was huge. And not eating. And I realized through that process was that my disease is cunning, baffling, and powerful. And it will use any excuse it can to eat or to use. Like, that was going to help, you know. But I really had to go through that and talk about it in some of the meetings. And I got a lot of peace around that it's going to, you know, it's, that's, you know, it's going to be okay. You know, don't listen to that stuff if it's, I have to once again lower my limitations. I can't watch Dallas Cowboy cheerleader tryouts on TV anymore because I feel bad about myself when I watch that show. So that's a limitation, you know. So it's like those things I have to learn. And so, but that whole thing about that has come up again. And Friday, what happened was, I was talking to my roommate about our state of the world, and I couldn't sleep. And I almost actually thought about, you know, not necessarily to just maybe eventually use as a result of it. I'm slowly trying to give up this one food item that I eat at my dinner, and I thought, well, I'm just going to eat it anyway because of the state of the world. Like, that makes no sense, but that's the insanity of it. And I think, and I really feel like that I wanted to share that today. I don't know if any of y'all ever go through any of those fears of the future or what's going to happen, but I really feel like, you know, the more I talk about it and find out that there's really nothing I can do from my end, I have to stay in today because I really, that's the whole thing. That whole Libya thing cleared up anyway. So, you know, so what's to say, but at least to stay in the moment, let go, let God, figure out what I can do today for my next fellow sufferer. And when all else fails, helping another compulsive overeater, being of service. I did not want, trust me, since 86, I have not wanted to come to this birthday party in OA. Never. And my sponsor goes, well, why not? I go, well, they're so serious about recovery. And she goes, well, maybe it'll rub off on you. I'm like, okay, so, but anyway, just letting go and letting God. Y'all have taught me to show up when I say I'm going to show up and to do whatever I'm supposed to do. And that has helped. And what my OA sponsor told me one time when I wanted to do really good at my new job, one time she said, let them show you. I'm so into making like a half, what is it, the fullback on the football team, just barreling through, no brain, but just barreling through and stepping back and pausing, having a moment to stop and pause, like before. And that's also an opportunity for God to have work in my life in that moment. And then I'll finish up with this. I wanted to start doing some writing, and this lady in OA, back in Vegas, I threw it out there that I said, is anybody interested in doing the For Today book with me? Well, she is a very gung-ho OA-er, and she said, I'll do it with you. So now we're doing this For Today book every day. I email her my answer to the question, and she does the same thing with me. And she's also very accountable. She's a very good accountable person to do this with. But one of the questions this past week came, what miracles have I experienced by letting go of outcomes? So even through some of the stuff that my even though I've had some rejections, God always seems to give me what I need to learn, as long as I stay around the answer and the solution. So anyway, and thank you all for being here. Thanks.
Thank you so much, Cynthia. Thank you to all of our wonderful panelists. Now is the time for questions and answers. Please raise your hand and I will call on as many questioners as possible. Your questions can be directed at one person specifically or generally for the panel to answer. Please be aware that we are recording this panel, and when asking a question, your voice may be audible on the recording. Who would like to ask the first question? They're in the black. Yes.
Okay. I have to look to see if I was in black. have any of you experienced relapse and been able to use this concept to get
And if not, have you been able to help sponsees in relapse get back?
I'll end. Oh, no, you no, go ahead. No, you go ahead. No.
How about first one and then the other? Here, just a minute.
The question is, if I relapse, no. Second part, have I helped people from relapse? Yes. And the very first question I ask them, what are you willing to do? When they say nothing, I say, okay. Then I say, can you read a minute a day? Oh, I can do a minute a day. Can you write a minute a day? I can write a minute a day. How about if you want to eat, you call me first? I can do that. That's how it works for me. And some it works and some it doesn't.
I still eat sugar and flour, and I'm trying to get away from that. But the bottom line for me is with my abstinence, I haven't binged or purged or used laxatives. I've done some other stuff, but not... That's the bottom line since I came in. I have been in the program, and there's been a period in my program when I did not, even in my, through the years, I have not enjoyed going to OA. But I knew that my life depended upon it. And so it's still one of those things, don't quit before the miracle. And then I'm always grateful when that feeling passes or I shake it up a bit. One time I was, back in the day before the internet, we used to have sponsor by mail. So I was always looking for some way when I'm not in the frame of like OA, Miss OA or OA guru or not guru, but OA cheerleader, at least trying to do something to kind of spark it up a bit, to kind of jumpstart me. Again.
Thank you. For me, when I went out for 6 years and came back, I remember coming back to the first meeting, seeing this former sponsee, and I saw two other people, a friend from AA and someone else, and they're like, oh, great, you know, let's get going, let's talk together. And all of a sudden, on day two, I found myself sponsoring two guys. I did not have a sponsor. And the previous years, when I was in Paris, very small group, I ended up dating this girl. We had the same sponsor. So I said, well, you keep the sponsor. You know, I'll find someone else. And I never did. And I went from 1988 till I came back in 2005 with no sponsor. So for me, the letting go was I was going to find a sponsor, ask them, and then follow whatever they said. And I picked the guy I refused to ever talk to because he was so strict. And it turned out he wasn't strict at all. I just thought he was strict. And whatever he told me to do, I did. And that, for me, was my version of letting go.
And then you after.
Rhonda, compulsive eater. How do you stay best in today? What is your daily routine to keep it there?
I start the day with God, and then I like what Cynthia said. Then I look for what I need to do, and sometimes it's make my bed. You know, it's just when it gets crazy in my head, Chatty Cathy starts before my feet hit the floor. I talk to it. I tell her to go fuck herself. Excuse me if I offend anyone with my language. Write about it. That's what I do. When Chatty's at her best, like at 4:45 before I hit the floor, I tell her what to do, and then I know what I need to do. I get up, I make my bed, I turn on the coffee, go do my reading, make my bed, get dressed. Even though I don't work, I'm doing a project, I put my face on, put my pearls on or my earrings on, and I go forward. I get calls. I take care of the calls. I do what's in front of me, and I loved your answer. Can you repeat that again about living what you look for? I like that.
I'm trying it on myself.
What?
The part of your speaking I missed. So
the living...
Living in the now.
One day is not how you do that.
Do whatever's in front of me. Stay... I chant a lot. So I'll say, God's in charge and I'm okay. God's in charge and I'm okay. And, you know, what the next, I can't even remember, but what's the first thing I got? What's the next thing I have to do? And sometimes there's a saying I got from Georgia, from a friend of mine, and well, she's from Alabama. She said, I'm so busy, I don't know whether I should wind my butt or scratch my watch. And in those times, on those times, I have to make a phone call or like pause. Remember, we all can breathe in. I'm constantly, even now, my sponsors, even friends will go, Cynthia, don't forget to breathe. Blow it out. That also helps. And I find my feet planted. I look to make sure that my feet are firmly planted on the ground. And or even put their hand on your head just so that you'll stay in today. Anyway.
You know what pause means, right? Pray, ask for help, ask God for help, unearth a problem, seek your sponsor, and express what's going wrong.
Oh, okay. Pray.
Pause equals pray, ask for help, ask God for help, unearth the problem,
For me, I'd love to say, you know, I meditate every morning, and you know, I've got two kids at home, so when I try and meditate, they're loud, you know, and I don't want to say, shut up, I'm meditating, I'm trying to get spiritual here, okay? But I also, that interchange, it's like lighten up, have a sense of humor, you know, let's try and approach whatever is going on today, no matter how horrible it is. Is there a funny way to look at this situation? Can I find some humor in it somehow? There's a guy named Al around here who he's. I got to put the microphone down, but he's go
right now. Stay in the moment now, and he'll like clap his hands. It's really annoying, but what it does do, it brings you right back to the moment. I'm right here, right now,
and right now, that's all. All I have to deal with is right now.
Hi, I'm Toby.
Hi, Toby.
I'm a planner, an event planner for a living, and it's hilarious. But I find myself planning my life, my free time, like every minute. I mean, I was already thinking like, oh, well, I need to, you know, schedule yoga, and I need to look at the calendar, and when do I need to do this, and so I can still go to my meetings 7 days a week, and then I'm talking to myself. Like, I'm sitting in these sessions planning. So, I mean, they're all good things. Like, I want to do a yoga practice, right? So, this whole do the next thing in front of me is terrifying, and I don't know how to do that. And does that mean that I can't plan routines? And I'm having a really hard time with this concept. So, I don't know that when planning ends and the letting go takes over, but...
I plan God laughs. I plan God laughs. It's just like this dinner. If it doesn't turn out, I'm fine. I know that now. I mean, I know I got to put the turkey in a certain oven. I got to do this, and I have to do this, and I can do the Brussels sprouts the day before. I know how to do all that. So if the oven doesn't work, what am I going to do? Oh, well. I'll use Roseanne's oven or Colleen's oven or Robin's oven. It's not a big deal. I planned, God laughs. I did not plan to be where I am today at my age. And that also doesn't give anybody any opportunity to get in there and be a part of your life, part of my life, excuse me. And as long as I'm planning and doing that, I don't have to face me. And that's a bitch, because I have been where you are. I am not there anymore. And taking a look at Emmy Sims was not so nice. But I found out that she's a much nicer person than I ever thought she was.
It's funny you should bring this up because I have every minute crammed with something to do, and my sponsor is saying to me, because I'm in the middle of step five, and I had my friends tell me one of the questions that in this process for me was to ask five trusted friends my what they thought were five of my weaknesses and five of my strengths. Ooh. And I didn't want anybody that was going to pussyfoot around it, but also to be kind. But anyway, they all generally said, you're here, but you're always planning ahead. You're always thinking about the next thing, you know, and you have an agenda. And so my sponsor, my new thing is to be here. Because right now I feel my foot on the ground, but to make sure to be here. I used to hear some people use what time is it here? Where am I here? What time is it now? But that just got too chanty for me, and it's so now I'm forced myself to say be here. But the other thing is, I would encourage. Makes me think of when I'm trying to orchestrate a bunch of stuff. It goes back to in the big book where we talk about step three, that being convinced that we were at that any life run on self-will can hardly be a success. We are always in a collision with somebody or somebody or something, even though our motives are good. And I don't want to take up time to read this to you, but that whole idea of being the actor, the director, the producer, the stage manager, the choreographer, you know, that's all I have to be careful about. There is a chance, there is a time to plan, but like you said, it can be fun. Some people are really good at planning and they're having a good time. It doesn't have to be a drill sergeant, you know. Anyway, so thanks.
When I get into the mindset, the planning mindset, for me what it is I'm afraid to be alone with myself. I'm not comfortable with me. So I need to have everything planned so I don't stop for a moment and think. And I find that I really now enjoy to have the time for myself. And I am a planner. My sponsor, he always makes fun of this answer. He says, well, what's your definition of happiness? For me, it's routine with some pleasant surprises. He goes, that's control. I'd go. But for me, I'm a routine guy. You know, I exercise like 5 or 6 days a week. But there's something already pre-planned. What am I supposed to do today? Okay, I go do it. And I got to prepare, you know, make sure that my abstinent food is all in line, you know, whether I'm going to go to a restaurant or make it at home. So there's planning. I have to plan. But also, I love my time with myself, doing nothing. When I turned 50, I went overseas, went to Venice and Paris for 15 days on my own. And I had the best time being alone. And not so good for my marriage, I guess, but how much, and I enjoyed being alone, but what it taught me was I'm fine doing nothing, not having a plan, and just being. And there's a certain amount of self-love that comes with that. And the self-love is being able to look at my life and look at myself and be, this is what I am, I'm in acceptance. Now, I have to say, being 50 is a hell of a lot easier doing that than it was at 30. And I think that's purely a function of age, not wisdom or program.
All right. Well, right now, we have our questions.
Thank you all. Sorry, Cynthia. Thank you all for participating. I would like to thank Peter, Cynthia, and Emmy for sharing their experience, strength, and hope. The closing ceremonies will begin in 10 minutes in the Los Angeles room. Thank you for letting me be of service.
Lisa, Nero's heading out.
Yeah, I just saw that.
So we can go down
I'll
there.
I'll come down, yeah.
Thank you so much.